Since the 1800s, Hickok & Boardman Insurance Group has been providing quality service and peace of mind to our clients. With our offices in Burlington, Stowe, and St. Albans, and our Dennis Ricker & Brown offices in Montpelier and Lynnonville, we are here when you need us.
And now WDEV-FM and AM presents our two-hour public affairs program, Open Mic with Mike Smith. Important topics, topical guests, and your phone calls. And now here's the host of Open Mic, Mike Smith.
Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us today. We have a very busy program today, and of course, if you have an opinion, concern, or comment, don't hesitate to give us a call at 802-244-1777 or toll-free at 877-291-8255. Garrett Graff, former editor of Political, will be joining us in just a minute. We'll be talking about national politics. And then Jim Harrison and Aaron Segris from the Vermont Retail and Grocers Association. We're going to talk about Coke's decision not to stock some of its products in Vermont stores because of Vermont's GMO labeling law. And then in the second hour, after we have checked in with our colleagues at Talk Media News, what we'll do is open up the mic. And I've got a question today that is actually on our poll question as well. Currently, there's no law in Vermont that prohibits public nudity. Should there be a law in Vermont to prevent people walking the streets in the nude? Of course, yesterday in Burlington, we saw a gentleman walking up Church Street nude. So that's the poll question today. You can go and register your vote, either yes or no, by going on our Facebook page, WDEV Facebook page, and voting right now. It's 100% yes. I suspect there's only a few that are on there. So go on to the poll and register your vote, either yes or no. Should there be a law in Vermont to prevent people walking the streets in the news? But it's my pleasure to welcome to Open Mic, first up, Garrett Graff, former editor of Political. Good morning, Garrett.
Good morning. I just want to make sure, Mike, that everyone knows I was not the person on Church Street yesterday.
You were too young. There should be a rule, by the way, that there's an age limit. But let me start out by this. It's sort of a provocative question, but Garrett, is Trump trying to lose this election?
So I think that the challenge that Donald Trump has is he keeps getting advice from traditional political operatives, but he has won the Republican primary, the presumptive nominee, by listening to none of it. So on some level, it makes sense that Donald Trump isn't listening to any advice that he's getting. Now, that being said, I don't think that Donald Trump, because he hasn't run before, he has no political experience, has no idea just how different a general election is from a primary election. And the challenge of trying to reach and address and run a 50-state national campaign is something that he and his organization just appears to be completely unprepared for.
Yeah, if you look at what he's done, just the last month of what he's done, he's picking fights where he doesn't need to pick fights. First of all is the picking of the fight with the judge that rules against him in the court case involving fraud charges against Trump University. And then he picks a fight with a very popular Republican governor, Susana Martinez, in New Mexico, who doesn't support him. His comments on the Orlando massacre were all over the place. And by the way, the National Rifle Association didn't support some of his positions. And then his fundraising has been atrocious. He has no ground game. He fires his campaign manager. He's got sky-high disapproval ratings of 70%. And he doesn't have the conservatives locked down yet. And I'm wondering if people just don't know who Donald Trump is, even after all of this time. Does he have to articulate a consistent set of core beliefs and values out there?
What's weird about Donald Trump is his appeal seems based on precisely not articulating a core set of beliefs. because what is appealing to him, what seems refreshing to him, is that he is someone who just speaks his mind, that he just speaks what he sees as the truth, what his supporters see as the truth. And that gives him, in a world of very carefully crafted soundbite, this seeming authenticity, even though I think at his core, he seems to have very few fixed beliefs, very few positions that are not negotiable, and very little understanding of the core underlying issues that he's talking about.
And that's the reason he's not locking down the conservatives, I would believe. I mean, he's squandering precious time. Right now, every minute should be blocked out to the November election. And he needs time to define himself. He needs time to define his opponent. And he needs time to coalesce a Republican coalition that is fractured right at the moment. And he needs time to appeal to independents and raise money. He's been dismal at raising money. And although that's maybe not as important for him, because he could self-fund, although he says he wants money from Republicans, it is critical in those ground games, because presidential candidates establish state by state the sort of the infrastructure for the ground game for the rest of the Republicans that are running in that state. So it seems to me that this is a campaign that doesn't have any discipline in it.
That's absolutely true. And you really began to see those fears coalesce last week with that first fundraising report of effectively the general election that showed Donald Trump with just $1.2 million cash on hand. That is a paltry amount of money. That is not a lot of money to have cash on hand in June of the election year if you are running for a congressional seat. So that is a stunningly low amount for a presidential campaign. And you're beginning to see that already take a toll on him and his campaign, not just in the ways that you mentioned, the ground game where he has literally hundreds fewer staff across the country than Hillary Clinton's campaign, but on the airwaves. Remember, in 2012, you saw the Democrats spend money early and heavily to define Mitt Romney before he had a chance to organize his own response. That exact same scenario is beginning to play out right now, where Hillary Clinton in recent weeks is running literally millions of dollars of television ads in battleground states like North Carolina. And Donald Trump right now is being outspent on the airwaves $140 million to zero. That is a stunning gap right now.
And for all his political hindrances, the only thing that Donald Trump's got going for him right at this moment is Hillary Clinton, because she, in national polls, he's only down, you know, 6%. If you do a consensus of polls, there's some that are 10, there's some that are 5, but around 6%. And this, I got to believe, Garrett, this has got to worry Democrats mightily, because Hillary Clinton is not a strong or likable candidate. Matter of fact, although Donald Trump has a 70% disapproval rate, she has a 55% disapproval rate. The public doesn't trust her. So they've got to be worried at the same time, because this has been a horrible month for Donald Trump, yet she should be pulling away a lot faster and a lot quicker than she is.
Yes and no. Two things to keep in mind there. I think you are right that it is a surprise to Democrats that the polls are not wider in some respects right now. But two things are happening. One, you have already seen the polls reflect a consolidation behind Donald Trump on the Republican side, because he wrapped up the nomination sooner than Hillary Clinton did. Hillary Clinton, to a certain extent, is still being hurt in the polls by this still unfolding battle with Bernie Sanders, that you have not seen Bernie Sanders supporters necessarily, quote unquote, come home to Hillary Clinton for the general election yet. The second is, this isn't a national election. You can disregard effectively all of the national polls that you see between now and election day. They are fun media stories, but they are effectively meaningless for the ground game where this election will actually end up being won. And so you are not seeing any serious threat in the polls yet to any of the blue states that Barack Obama has won in 2008 and 2012. And that it looks like Donald Trump still has a very, very difficult path in the Electoral College to get to the necessary 270 electoral votes. So the polls, as close as they may be, still are pointing to what could be a historic landslide victory in the Electoral College by Hillary Clinton.
Let's turn to Bernie Sanders for a second. He has an op-ed in today's New York Times where he says the Democrats better wake up and focus on the economic issues, and globalization is not what it's cracked up to be. It's leaving a lot of people behind. Are the Democrats ignoring this issue? Because Bernie is blurting it out that they've got to wake up on this issue.
I think Bernie Sanders is right on this to a certain extent, that you and you're seeing this. This is not an American-only challenge. This is something that we saw playing out in a big way in the Brexit vote last week in the United Kingdom. We're seeing this play out in various European countries as well, that there has been this reckoning in the last 2 to 3 years with the realities of globalization, that the challenges to sort of the small d democratic, small l liberal democracies that we have been, that have seemed so powerful in the last 20 years, are really beginning to feel the strains of inequality pushing forward in their societies between have and have nots since the financial crisis.
One of the things that was fascinating about the Bredix vote was that it split right down the middle, left and right. I mean, the left, there were equal amounts of the left that were voting to exit the EU as there was the right. And I found that fascinating yesterday.
Yeah, and I think you're seeing the same thing. I mean, we might be watching right now the splintering of two of the oldest political parties in the world, the Tories and the Labour Party in Europe. And we might see in the next couple of months the UK Independence Party and the Liberal Dems really rebuild a new coalition in some of the same ways that I think we're seeing in the 2016 presidential election here. You know, we're seeing in many ways Bernie Sanders supporters on a lot of issues sounding much more like Donald Trump supporters than sort of the middle of what I would call the Hillary Clinton, Jeb Bush centrist perspective.
And that's a great segue into my next question. Bernie Sanders supporters view Hillary Clinton as the status quo, and yet they're not satisfied with the status quo. Do they flock to her?
I think that they end up coming home to her. I don't know that I would use the word flock, but that Donald Trump is going to be scary enough to enough of them that he is going to have... The Sanders supporters, I think, are going to end up voting for Hillary by November. But I'll tell you, as I have had conversations with voters across the country this year, I have been fascinated by the number of people who were really torn between voting for Donald Trump or Bernie Sanders, two people who, when you talk to establishment Democrats or establishment Republicans, In Washington, they don't see any parallels between Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders, but I think a lot of their supporters actually do.
Let me pick up on that theme. Yesterday or 2 days ago, Donald Trump talked about he did a speech where basically what he was advocating was protectionist policies. That's got to give conservatives further pause about him, doesn't it?
It absolutely does. You saw this yesterday. There were two fascinating tweets that came out almost simultaneously. One from Richard Trumka, one of the most powerful labor leaders in the United States, bashing Donald Trump's election economic plans, and one from the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, traditionally one of the most Republican business-friendly organizations in the nation, bashing Donald Trump as well. So, I think you are seeing a lot of conservatives in the traditional economic realm and in the traditional national security realm very troubled and very worried about what Donald Trump is saying.
What's Bernie playing for the convention?
Bernie is playing for two things. One is, I think he is trying to ensure that Hillary Clinton doesn't tack back immediately to the middle, that he can hold her feet to the progressive fire for as long as he can. And the second is, I think he hopes that by keeping his cause alive, he's going to keep his supporters energized in a big way to help down ballot Democrats, which I think is going to be where Bernie Sanders might end up having the biggest impact come this fall.
And turning to the Republican convention, many prominent Republicans are not even showing up at the convention. Can Trump win without them?
What's confounding, I think, to many people in the Republican Party is that Donald Trump's biggest appeal to his supporters is exactly his rejection by the traditional Republican Party. And so I don't think his supporters are going to be at all surprised or unhappy, for that matter, not to see a Jeb Bush or a George W. Bush at the Cleveland convention. At the same time, though, Donald Trump is in big trouble with down-ballot Republicans who are very worried about their chances of holding on to the U.S. Senate and perhaps even losing some House seats coming up in November. And to the extent that Republican candidates are running away from their nominee, that's going to make it a lot harder for him to build the ground organizations that he needs. I mean, when he was up in New Hampshire the other day, we're already in Vermont watching all of these Kelly Ayotte TV ads for or against her. But when he was up in New Hampshire, the Republican senator up for re-election this fall happened just entirely coincidentally, I'm sure, to find that she was called back to Washington that day for urgent business and so was unable to appear in New Hampshire with Donald Trump.
Hillary Clinton seems to have escaped any major political damage from Benghazi, but is the email controversy posing any political troubles for her?
The challenge both with Benghazi and with the emails is, Hillary Clinton is basically a Rorschach test. People see in her what they want to believe. And so, you saw this across the internet yesterday with dueling headlines on conservative and liberal websites where, there was plenty of information to exonerate Hillary Clinton in the Benghazi report if you wanted to exonerate her, and there was plenty to condemn her and the Obama administration if you wanted to condemn them. And that's, I think, effectively what we're going to see with the email scandal as that continues to play out is for the people who think that this is another sign of her mendacity and dirty tricks, they're going to believe that the email controversy backs that up. And for those who believe that Hillary Clinton's scandals have over 25 years amounted to a giant mountain of nothing, they're going to believe that exact same thing.
As you mentioned, I mean, Hillary Clinton's pouring a lot of money in some of these swing states in terms of defining who Donald Trump is. And right now, his opponents are having a field day defining him as a bigot, a racist, a sexist, and his rhetoric sort of makes him sometimes an easy target for some of these accusations. What does he have to do to sort of counter this? There isn't much time left. People think of November as way off, but in election cycle, there isn't a lot of time left.
Absolutely true. And when you actually look back historically at polls and particularly the history of sort of how elections hinge on a referendum on the incumbent party, effectively June is when all of that gets baked in. This is, you know, we have the economy we're going to have this fall. We have the president's approval ratings about what we're going to likely have for later this fall. So the time is rapidly evaporating for Donald Trump to make a serious run here. But Donald Trump's challenge in this is a little bit different, which is he is campaigning based on his business acumen. It's not necessarily anything having to do with the personal attacks that he's weathering. It's that he's a smart businessman and he's going to be able to negotiate a good deal for America. And that you're really beginning to see Democrats also go after that. And I think that that's where Donald Trump can be most hurt. If Democrats are able to undermine the idea that he is a successful businessman, that's what's really going to end up hurting him.
Garrett Graff, thank you very much.
My pleasure. Talk to you soon.
Thank you. That's Garrett Graff, former editor of Politico, on talking about national politics. Just to give you an update, we have a poll this morning. Currently, there is no law in Vermont that prohibits public nudity. Should there be a law in Vermont to prevent people walking the streets in the nude? Of course, this is a poll that generates itself from yesterday's events where a gentleman walked up Church Street in the nude. There's no law against it. Couldn't be arrested as long as he didn't disrobe in public. That would be a violation, but as long as he was nude coming out of his house or wherever he came out of, that is legal. Currently, it's 50-50. Wow, Vermonters are welcoming of people walking up the street nude, I guess. So if you want to vote on our poll question today, go on to our WDEV Facebook page and vote. Should there be a law in Vermont to prevent people walking the streets in the nude? And we'll discuss this later on in the program. Up next, we'll talk about Coke's decision to keep some of its products off Vermont shelves because of the GMO labeling law. This is Open Mic. Welcome back to Open Mic. I'm Mike Smith. It's my pleasure to welcome to our program today Jim Harrison and Aaron Seigrist of the Vermont Retail and Grocers Association. We're talking about Coke's decision not to stock some of its products in Vermont stores. The decision is based upon the fact that starting July 1, Vermont has a new GMO labeling law, and Coke has a few problems with it, and I imagine so does the Vermont Retail and Grocers Association. Good morning, Jim. Good morning, Aaron.
Good morning, Mike. Good morning.
Jim, let's start with you. Why is Coca-Cola not stocking some of their products in Vermont stores starting July 1st?
Well, first of all, we can't speak for Coca-Cola, but as any company would, they're looking at a variety of things, and probably this is as good a time as any to review, the various different product lines and sizes they have. It is our understanding, and, certainly more information should be available from Coke directly, but is our information 95% of what they produce and sell in Vermont will still continue to be available. What may happen is there may be certain sizes like 16-ounce cans, for example, that may not be available, going forward. On a larger scale, this is an example why, in an ideal world, from our perspective, we would have a national uniform law on GMO labeling or disclosure as opposed to a state law, because you're going to run into some of this. Companies are not obligated to sell their product in Vermont. We want to give every reason for companies do make their products available in Vermont disclose the information that should be disclosed, and hopefully those definitions would be reached at a national level.
Let's back up a little bit just so that we can catch everybody up. What does the Vermont GMO labeling law do?
Well, first and foremost, it requires products that are packaged for the most part, although there are certainly some retail products as well, that if they are have ingredients that contain ingredients that were produced with genetic engineering, then they need to be labeled as such, produced with genetic engineering, partially produced with genetic engineering. Now, when we say ingredients, we're talking about crops that originate from GMO seed. For example, over 90% of the nation's corn crops are from genetically engineered seeds. And what that essentially means is the seeds are produced in a laboratory as opposed to perhaps the old former traditional methods of trying to crossbreed different varieties. And seed companies do that to try to develop different traits, in some cases increase yield, some cases include improve drought resistance. So corn is obviously a major commodity, and it's used in as an ingredient in many products that are on store shelves. Corn's not the only crop. Soy, again, is another item that is largely GE. Canola, which, canola oil is used in a lot of products. Sugar beets, is in a lot of sweeteners. So there are some major commodities that are largely GE in our nation's food stream. So therefore, the state of Vermont has mandated that the products sold at retail contain that disclosure so consumers would have that information when they purchase that product.
And what happens if there's a product on a shelf in a store that doesn't have the proper label? Who's liable for that, for violating the law?
Well, if it's a manufactured product, ABC company or whatever, it's the manufacturer's responsibility. It's not for the retailer to question whether or not the product is properly labeled, or it's not their responsibility to sticker it. It's clearly the manufacturer's responsibility. Now, having said that, retailers are responsible for certain products that they process or package. For example, if you have a deli and you're offering potato salad by the quart, the pint, what have you, if you have a fresh bakery and you make chocolate chip cookies or muffins, the store is, in those cases, responsible because they become, quote-unquote, the manufacturer. The store is also responsible for labeling certain bulk products like fresh produce. So papayas, which are largely GE, would have to be labeled unless store has found a source that is not GE. Additionally, there are, other areas that, a store is responsible for, like if they make meat, which is exempt by itself, but if they marinate that meat, the marinade includes some GE ingredients, then the store again becomes the manufacturer under the law, as well as if they have grocery products that have their name on it or their brand. That is something they become a manufacturer under the law.
We're speaking with Jim Harrison and Aaron Seigrist of the Vermont Retail and Grocers Association. If you want to join our conversation, we're talking about Vermont's new GMO labeling law. Give us a call at 802-244-1777 or toll free at 877-291-8255. Jim or Aaron, from your organization's perspective, why is this law problematic?
Karen, do you want to answer that?
I wouldn't. Question? I guess I wouldn't necessarily call it problematic so much as, you know, providing information to the consumers. It's you know, it's definitely going to take some time to get retailers up to speed and manufacturers to have the proper labeling. You know, it could be a potential problem if we do see state by state patchwork regulations. You know, we have a number of small batch manufacturers within the state that do distribute to multiple states within New England and around the country. You know, our concern is again the patchwork of state regulations that might start to crop up, and that can be difficult to have numerous labels for our members, but also it just causes some confusion for consumers as well.
And let me just get this. Is there a lawsuit going on right now over this Vermont labeling law?
There is a lawsuit. It was filed shortly after the law was signed 2 years ago by the national manufacturers and some related groups that basically are challenged the constitutionality of the law because of interstate commerce issues, et cetera. We are not party to that lawsuit, but today the court has not intervened. The actual merits of the lawsuit, you know, may be held or looked at later this year, but nothing definitive at this point.
If I had to characterize sort of your position here, is that you're not against GMO labeling. What you want is some consistency throughout the United States. Is that what I'm hearing?
Correct. Yeah,
that's a very fair statement, Mike. There is a lot of consumer interest in learning more about food products that we all purchase, and certainly Vermont consumers through their legislature have, you know, expressed their concern by enacting a state law. We just think the way the food distribution system works today, that it could be very expensive and could limit choice if we do a state-by-state labeling law. So whatever that solution is, you know, there are certainly discussions happening in Washington now to address something on a national basis that would preempt state laws. That would be much more beneficial in the long term, in our view, for Vermont consumers, rather than trying to do it alone. If New York State and in New York didn't pass it this year, but their legislature was looking at it, if they had passed a labeling law this year that was ever so slightly different than Vermont, you know, it wouldn't take a rocket scientist to figure out if you were a national manufacturer and you could only label one way, you know, what market would you pick? You know, one with 20 million people or one with 600,000 people? Mm-hmm. That would be the downside of, you know, having a state-by-state labeling law. The big state wins, small state loses.
We're speaking with Jim Harrison and Aaron Sigrist of the Vermont Retail and Grocers Association. If you wish to join our conversation, the number is 802-244-1777 or toll-free at 877-291-8255. Let's go to Courtney in Greensboro. Ben, Courtney, you're on open mic. Good morning.
That's Lynette. My last name is Courtney, but that's okay.
I'm sorry, Lynette.
That's fine. I get that all the time. I have firsthand knowledge of what the food manufacturers are going through to comply. I would be completely mortified if I had to put a GMO label on my products. We are Pear Smoked of Vermont. We smoke trout and salmon, and I make a smoked fish spread and a smoked calamari dip. And I have just finally gotten the last of my suppliers to tell me that they are GMO-free, and I've had to change my mayonnaise, which is a big component of my product, and I've gotten certificates from everybody to show that I am compliant and I am heaving a giant sigh of relief, and it's not been fun, but I also want to applaud the national companies who are not fighting this and have decided that, you know, out of the goodness of their hearts or their concern for their consumers, that they are going to do this on all their products. And I you know, hooray for them. And I probably don't buy things from companies that are fighting this anyway, but you know, that's something that can be done to pressure them, is to not buy their food, their products, if they're putting up a big fight about this.
Thanks, Lynette. By the way, Lynette, thank you very much for your phone call. Your product sounds scrumptious, actually. I'm thinking about them right now as we speak. How big of an issue is this with major manufacturers and processors, Jim or Aaron? Is there angst going on out there? I gather if they're filing a lawsuit, there is angst out there.
I'll take a quick stab at that. You know, I think, you know, while there was initially some concern about the disclosure itself, and I can't speak for all the food manufacturers, I think, you know, over the last couple of years that has largely changed. At the end of the day, food manufacturers want to respond to the consumer, and Campbell's was one of the first national brands to come out and say, you know, consumers have asked for this information, and we're going to provide that information, and we're going to be fully compliant with the Vermont law. Having said that, they are very much concerned about individual state laws, such as Vermont, because of the potential patchwork. Patchwork does not work in today's food distribution system. Major distribution centers, retailers have indicated very strongly we do not have the ability to double the size of our warehouse overnight to make room for two of every product. We can't do that. And that's in large part why the national companies that have come out and said we're going to comply with Vermont's law, and I applaud those, just as Lynette did, that, you know, they're not only taking care of Vermont consumers, perhaps satisfying consumers with that information, other states. So, but, you know, it was in large part a practical aspect to that. They can't label it for one state very efficiently.
And that, Aaron, that seems to be the concern out there from a manufacturer's standpoint. I'm starting to see their concern is that if you label for one state and have to label differently for another state or another state, and it multiplies, pretty soon you're losing money, aren't you?
Well, there's potential to lose money. We at VRGA don't necessarily know the full extent of the financial impact, but there is potential. You know, you're duplicating supply chain, you know, the employees. You've got the upkeep of the two different warehouses. You know, it's the supply chain is so extensive and something that nobody really can completely understand unless they live it every day. And we talk to our members every day and still are learning about the intricacies of what it takes to get products from the manufacturer to Vermont, let alone every other state. And like Jim said, it would get to be too much to have multiple warehouses, you know, one for GMO labeling and one for non-GMO labeled products.
Tom, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to take this phone call from Rich in Huntington. Then we'll go to break, and when we come back, I want to talk to Jim and Aaron about the national legislation that's going on right now. Let's go to Rich in Huntington. Rich, you're on open mic. Good morning.
Good morning. Did no one really see this coming? I mean, this was done courtesy of the Vermont Democrats and progressives who really just wanted their claim to fame to get themselves an interview on some show on MSNBC. But, I mean, it was just reckless and foolhardy to enact this for a state for one state, let alone, but a state that has such a small national market share, we're going to end up, people who maybe wanted to shy away from GMO products but would like a little information on them are going to find that they're just, their favorite products are not going to be on the store shelf next month. And I hope folks will retain this anger and carry it with them into the voting booth this November and remember the people that brought it here. It's a nice concept, but it has to be done at the national level.
Thanks, Rich. And Jim and Aaron, if you just hold that thought and talk, we'll talk about the national sort of efforts to talk about GMO labeling in a moment. This is Open Mic. Welcome back to Open Mic. I'm Mike Smith. We're speaking with Jim Harrison and Aaron Segris of the Vermont Retail and Grocers Association. Jim and Aaron, there's a national debate going on about GMOs right now, and there was an agreement. The Senate had reached an agreement in the Agriculture Committee, where they had an agreement between Democrats and Republicans on a national labeling, GMO labeling law. But Senator Sanders has come out against it. Governor Shumlin has come out against it. Senator Leahy has come out against it. What are the chances of that even getting a vote?
Well, I think there's a good chance it will get a vote. It remains to be seen. To get anything done in Washington, you need 60 votes in the U.S. Senate. But because it's bipartisan, I think there's a good chance that it will advance. The major difference between the proposal in Washington and Vermont's law is that the Washington proposal does require mandatory disclosure like Vermont. However, it allows manufacturers to either print it on the package, something similar but would obviously be different because it would be federal, on the package, or allow consumers access through a QR code so you could look it up on your smartphone. That's the major difference, and a lot of folks in Vermont don't like that. It's not as readily available as being on the package. I totally understand that. If they could pass a Vermont-style unpacked labeling law nationally in Washington, we'd be all for that. The reality is it's a political compromise. That's the best they can do. They tried to get a vote on the or pass a Vermont-style unpackaged labeling law in Washington. They can't get the 60 votes for that. So key senators on both sides of the aisle have been working together for the last few months to come up with something that may be able to get 60 votes, and this is what they put forth last week. So it remains to be seen. Meanwhile, we have a law going into effect July 1, and until Congress intervenes or the court intervenes, we are doing our darndest. Aaron and I are answering questions every day about Vermont's law and how do we help members of the industry make sure they understand it and comply with it.
Let's change subjects completely. There's going to be a leadership change at the Vermont Retail and Grocers Association. Jim, I never thought you were going to be retiring, but it seems like you are at the end of the year. Aaron, you're going to be taking over first. Jim, why'd you decide to retire? And Aaron, what are you looking forward to? So let's start with Jim.
Yeah, well, I've been involved with the association for 29 years, and I think like everything in this world, it's time for a change, and I'm not ready for the word retirement quite yet.
Yeah, I haven't been successful at it.
I know, but maybe I'll, host a radio talk show. I mean, I'll look for the next opportunity to do something a little different and stay involved. Maybe not quite at the same level as I'm doing today, but we were very fortunate to lure a young lady to join us last year, and Erin, and I think she's going to do an outstanding job with the
the association and with the members going forward.
Aaron, you're excited?
I am excited. You know, it's obviously an incredibly big job, and I have some very big shoes to fill. But Jim has done a fantastic job of laying a solid foundation of the association over the past 27 years. He has created fantastic relationships, and he's been gracious enough to kind of, you know, foster those relationships with me. So hopefully I can continue to grow the association and continue to serve as an information resource to our members. You know, I don't want to say we're going to completely change it, but there will be a couple, we'll make a couple small changes just to bring information to members in different ways, or, you know, just entice younger members to join. And, you know, we are retail and grocery now, so it takes a little extra work to entice retailers. My growing up in a small business in upstate New York, you know, I remember my dad saying multiple times, well, what kind of money are you saving me, or what are you benefiting me with if I join your association? So that rings loud and clear in my head every day, and I'm always trying to think of new ways to entice retailers and grocers. And I think, like I said, we have a really solid foundation, and hopefully we can keep growing.
Hey, Aaron. Hey, Jim, thank you so much for joining us today, and thank you for all the information.
Thank you for having
us. Thank you, Mike.
That's Jim Harrison and Aaron Seigrist of the Vermont Retail and Grocers Association. I want to thank them for joining us today. Coming up, and check in with Talk Media News, and then we'll open up the phone lines. And one of the topics I'm going to talk about coming right out of the break is currently there's no law in Vermont that prohibits public nudity. Should there be a law in Vermont that prevents people from walking the streets in the nude, like somebody did yesterday going up Church Street in Burlington? So be very interested in your phone calls on that issue. It is strange. You can't be nude on the beach in Burlington, but you can be nude on Church Street in Burlington. And that's something that I want to talk about coming out of the blocks, as well as other national news, including Bernie Sanders' op-ed piece in the New York Times today. This is Open Mic, and you are listening to locally owned and operated WDEV Radio News on the Friendly Pioneer, celebrating its 85th year anniversary this year. WDEV AM 550, broadcasting from Waterbury and Montpelier, 96.1 FM from Warren, 96.5 FM from Barrie, and serving the kingdom at 101.9 FM from Island Pond. Of course, streaming worldwide at WDEVradio.com. I'm Mike Smith. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to Open Mic. I'm Mike Smith. We now turn our attention to national issues, and on the line is one of our favorite colleagues, Ellen Ratner from Talk Media Radio. Good morning.
Good morning, and lots going on. First of all, the Benghazi report came out yesterday. No smoking gun with Hillary. A lot of mistakes were made. That's very clear. And, you know, the CIA spends its time waterboarding people, but they're not looking into things the way they perhaps should be, and I'll give you a perfect example. I was in the Philippines. This is in 1989 when there was a coup d'etat. It was after the coup d'etat of the Marcos. This was the second coup d'etat. And you could tell more by talking to cab drivers on the street than you could our U.S. Embassy. And it's because the U.S. Embassy and the CIA have a rule, you can't spend more than 3 years in a country. Well, sometimes it takes a long time to get somebody really acquainted with people there. They're afraid people are going to get too close. But on the other hand, by not getting close enough, we don't get information.
Hmm. Hey, Ellen, just it does seem that Hillary Clinton has escaped any major political damage from Benghazi, but what about the email controversy?
Is a whole other issue.
Does that pose a problem for her?
I sure it poses a problem for her, and that's what we're getting at, that it poses a big problem for her. She says it doesn't, and clearly there's not going to be an indictment before the election, and in fact the Justice Department won't indict, it doesn't matter whether it's Republicans or Democrats, before an election because they don't want to influence an election. However, if somebody in the department starts to talk who is a career person, that would make things very different.
And today, Bernie Sanders had an op-ed piece in the New York Times where he basically says the Democrats better wake up because this globalization is causing a world of haves and have-nots. And if a lot of people are being left behind, and if the Democrats ignore this,
they do it at their peril.
They do it at their peril.
That's right.
Is he right?
Well, that's exactly what Bernie Sanders speaks to. And it's very interesting that sometimes he and Trump sound very much alike, particularly on issues of trade. But there is a bigger issue in trade, and that's called robotics, that a lot of jobs are being lost to robotics, not necessarily just to trade.
And one of the things that Donald Trump did a day or two ago was that he gave an economic speech, but conservatives are reeling on that because it was pretty much advocating protectionist policies.
Which conservatives do not like. So he's taking more of a Bernie Sanders stance, and traditional Republicans are not happy campers.
One of the things that I've posed some questions to people like yourself, I had Garrett Graff, former editor of Politico, on this morning. Is Trump trying to lose this election?
Not at all. I think he's really trying to win the election, and I know that's been sort of it because he was friends with the Clintons, that he's trying to lose the election. I don't think that's not who Trump is. And anybody who knows him or knows of him, and I know a lot of people in New York who know him, feel like, you know, he may be a blowhard, he may be out there, but he's trying to win this election.
And then on the other side, you've got Hillary Clinton, who is not your most likable candidate, has a trust issue. She even admits she has a trust issue with the American public. Can she convince Sanders supporters to support her?
Well, that's the case that's got to be made at the convention, and it'll be interesting to see what kind of role they give Bernie Sanders and his delegates at the convention. Now, what's also interesting is his delegates, they say they're not rich delegates and they need money, so please contribute to the Sanders delegates campaign so people can go to the convention.
What's Bernie playing for at the convention?
I'm sure he wants a speaking role, and I think what he has said on numerous interviews is that he wants to have some influence in terms of the platform and the direction of the party.
And on the Republican side, many prominent Republicans aren't showing up for the convention. Does that hurt Trump at all?
Oh, I think it hurts Trump quite a bit with the rank and file. And what you don't want to do is have the rank and file stay home and have Hillary and GOTV get out the vote.
The Bredix vote, does it have any impact on U.S. politics?
Well, it's hard to know what's really going to happen with that because they have a negotiation period. It may happen over 2 years. It may be more symbolic than real. It may be real more than symbolic. It's very hard to know how it's going, and anybody who says they know how it's going doesn't really know what's going on.
Ellen, what else is happening down in D.C.?
Okay, so yesterday there was a bill passed, and it wasn't passed, actually. It was put up on the Zika virus, and what's fascinating about the Zika virus is that it's what I call a Christmas tree bill. So they added all kinds of, the Democrats call it poison pill, but they added what I call all these ornaments on it instead of doing a clean bill. The Democrats have done exactly the same thing. This is not a Republican or Democratic issue. And the bill has, you know, whether you can fly a Confederate flag at a federal cemetery, all this kind of craziness going on. But the fact is if they want to stop the Zika virus, if they want to do the research, they've got to put money in and make it a clean bill.
And anything else?
The only other thing that is going on, of course, besides trade, which is a huge issue right now, is where the candidates are going to spend the fourth, and they haven't totally announced that. Also, the Supreme Court saying they're not going to hear another, or there's actually several abortion restriction bills. I think they spoke the other day when they announced what was going on.
Ellen, I got a question. I don't know where I am on this, but it seems to me that whether you're for gun control or against gun control, the spectacle that you saw in Congress, the sit-in that you saw in Congress, left me with a bad taste in my mouth because it basically told the American public everything that they despise about Washington, that it's out of control, that it's chaos. It sort of, what was your take on that? Did it have any impact?
I thought it was great, and I thought it reminded me of the 60s, which is where I always like to be, because I was a child of the 60s. So I have a different take. I thought it was great, but, you know, that's just my liberal lefty loony self.
Now, picking up on that, you know, currently there's no law in Vermont that prohibits public nudity, but yesterday a man walked up Church Street nude in downtown Burlington. And so my question is, should there be a law in Vermont?
Well, I have a problem with nudity, but I have a problem with tattoos and nose rings and all that kind of stuff. So, again, I'm just an old bat.
Ellen Ratner, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay, that's Ellen Ratner from Talk Media News. Up next, let's talk about this. Currently, there's no law in Vermont that prohibits public nudity, but should there be a law to prevent people like yesterday walking the streets in the nude? I'd be interested in your phone calls at 802-244-1777 or toll free at 877-291-8255. If you've got an opinion, give us a call. If you don't want to call, you can go on to our WDEV Facebook page and cast a vote, because it's the poll question of the day. Be interested in your phone calls on this subject. This is Open Mic. Welcome back to Open Mic. I'm Mike Smith. Really want to get your opinion, your comments on this aspect of Vermont's law. Starting July 1, a lot of new laws will take place in Vermont, and one of them is that you've got to give pedestrians and cyclists, bicyclists, more room in terms of passing them, a 4-foot sort of leeway when you pass them. There are other laws as well. But yesterday, in downtown Burlington, a man walked the streets wearing only a red bandana and shoes and socks and nothing else. And you may say, well, he must have been arrested. But currently there is no law in Vermont that prohibits public nudity. You can get arrested, though, for disrobing in public. That is considered lewd and lascivious conduct. But if you come out of your house nude and walk up Church Street and avoid parks in Burlington, because parks, under an ordinance, you can't be naked in a city park. So if he would walk into a city park or a city beach, he would have been arrested. Or if he would have disrobed in public, he would have been arrested. But currently, there's no law in Vermont that prohibits public nudity. And given the fact that we're turning into July 1, where new laws come into effect, I thought it was a perfect time to sort of ask your opinion. Should there be a law in Vermont to prevent people walking the streets in the nude? And give us a phone call with your opinion at 802-244-1777 or toll free at 877-291-8255. Currently, there's no law in Vermont that prohibits public nudity. Should there be one? And if you don't want to sort of call in, some people don't like to call in, you can go onto our Facebook page and click either yes or no on our poll question of the day. Should there be a law in Vermont to prevent people walking the streets in the nude? Currently, it's 75% say yes, 25% say no. Let's go to Rob in North Carolina. Rob, you're on Open Mic. Good morning.
Hey, Mike, you leave the tough questions for us out here. Nothing about globalization or the war on terror, but about nudity. Okay, that's where you want to go, Mike.
Well, if you just hold on, we'll get to those other issues, but this is an issue that I think Vermonters want to talk about. So,
yeah, just laughing at you, Mike. We can laugh together, right? You know, I think there's got to be a panel. I mean, you should go and you should register if you want to do this, you know? Okay. And the panel will decide at a preliminary looking whether you should be out in public nude or not.
There should be an age limit as well, Rob, I think.
Yeah, you know, all models all Trump models ought to be able to go out there and do that. They don't even need a permit. Is that where we're going, Mike?
I don't know where we're going here, Rob, but thank you for your phone call. I'm just curious what you all are thinking. You know, currently there isn't a law that prohibits public nudity, but some guy walked up Church Street yesterday in the nude, and there's nothing anybody could do about it. So should there be a law? Let's go to Tim and Warren. Tim, you're on open mic. Good morning.
Hi, I just wanted to point out that some certain towns do have individual laws against nudity, so it's not all of Vermont that has open nudity.
That's right. There's an ordinance. Matter of fact, Tim, you're absolutely right. Brattleboro for years had people that were walking in downtown Brattleboro or protesting in downtown Brattleboro that were nude, and they passed an ordinance. And in Burlington, they have an ordinance that basically says you can't do this in a park. So you're right, Tim.
All right, that's my time. That's all I wanted to say.
Thank you very much. That's Tim from Warren. Thank you for your phone call. Currently, there's no law in Vermont that prohibits public nudity. Should there be a law in Vermont to prevent people from walking the streets in the nude? What do you think? I kind of think, I don't know. I sort of think there should be, but let's go to Jim in Jericho. Jim, you're on open mic. Good morning.
Good morning. I think it should go a little bit further and have, like, we have certain places that are known nude beaches, known nudist camps. If you go there, expect it. But I don't think that we need to be doing it in public where there are younger people. Now, I was out shopping yesterday, not down in Burlington, but out shopping, and I didn't see too many people that I'd want to witness without clothes on. So, I don't know.
Jim,
I think there's a time and a place for everything. You know, and there's certain places, if it's adults, sure, have your fun, you know. But
Jim,
I think they should, you know, it's kind of too bad that you take your kids, you know, downtown shopping or to the mall, you know, be at Church Street or anywhere. And you have to, you know, explain to the kids why this person, you know, is acting that way.
Hey, Jim, thank you for your phone call. Let's go to Brad in Montpelier. The question we're asking is, should there be a law to prevent people walking the streets in the nude? Brad, you're on open mic. Good morning.
I look at it this way. It's a common sense issue. You don't have bicyclists going down the interstate riding their bicycle on the interstate.
Mm-hmm.
You have the pedophile issue with stuff. That doesn't help with people running around nude with little kids. Now, that's not to be said that everybody shouldn't enjoy their nudity. Put it in a nudist colony where it belongs and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're more or less encouraging the pedophile issue if this is going to escalate, as far as I'm concerned. It's a common sense thing. We're going to spend all this money on passing bill, waste all the money in the legislature for another bill that chances are you're not going to get enforced any more than the cell phone issue. I see 75 cell phone people on the road every day, two a day, to almost run me off the road.
Mm-hmm.
It's common sense.
Hey, Brad.
Put it in the right place, you know.
Brad, thank you for your phone call. I appreciate it. We're asking the question this morning, and it comes from events that happened in Burlington yesterday. A man nude walked up Church Street, and currently there's no law in Vermont that prohibits public nudity. There are some ordinances out there, and in Burlington, on the beaches and in public parks, you cannot be nude, but you can be nude in any other place, and so the question is, should there be a law in Vermont to prevent people from walking the streets in the nude? There's an event in Chittenden County as well where bicyclists bicycle in the nude. So be interested in your phone calls. Be interested in your comments and opinions on this issue. Should there be a law in Vermont to prevent people walking the streets in the nude? Give us a call at 802-244-1777 or toll free at 877-291-8255. We certainly have lit up the phone lines on this. Let's go to Glens Falls, New York. Glens Falls, you're on.
Good morning.
Good morning.
About the public nudity.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, let me say it's something that I don't particularly need to see. Having said that, How illegal do you plan to make it? I mean, what is going to be the penalty? Are we talking jail time? Are we talking a fine? Maybe it should be the traffic code. You could make it a moving violation.
Hey, thank you so much for your phone call. I appreciate it. Let's go to Jericho. Jericho, you're on open mic this morning. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
Great, thank you.
So I happened to have been in Burlington yesterday and experienced said gentleman on two separate occasions.
can you explain?
The guy's got gumption, and I applaud him, whether it's, you know, just a political statement or just saying, you know, there are 3.5 billion penises on the planet. Why is his that, you know, shocking? There's more on your kid's internet on the computer than what this gentleman was displaying yesterday, and I just don't see it's such a big deal. I like that there was a little bit of a kerfuffle over it, and I'm glad that it did, you know, create this conversation. I just don't see it's such a big deal, and the moral indignation and the outrageous responses by certain individuals just kind of highlights our puritanical origins as a nation. And it's, you know, it's a little unfortunate, but hey, kudos to this guy. So thank you for taking my call.
Thank you for calling in. We appreciate it. The question we're asking this morning, currently there's no law in Vermont that prohibits public nudity. Should there be a law in Vermont to prevent people from walking the streets in the nude? And this is because of an incident yesterday where a gentleman walked up Church Street in the buff. But he was wearing a red bandana and shoes and socks, but nothing else. So give us a call if you have an opinion on this, 802-244-1777, or toll-free at 877-291-8255. Or if you're shy and don't want to call in, you can go on to our WDEV Facebook page and vote on this question. Should there be a law in Vermont to prevent people walking the streets in the nude? And currently it is 60-40 on the poll results there. So give us a call. And what I'll do, Tom, I'm going to just do this, and then we'll go right to the break, and we'll come back with more of our poll question as well as some other issues that are happening. Welcome back to Open Mic. I'm Mike Smith. We got a bunch of issues that we're trying to get your opinion on. But the first one we're talking about today is, currently, there's no law in Vermont that prohibits public nudity. Should there be a law in Vermont to prevent people walking the streets in the nude? And the reason for this question is yesterday, a gentleman walked up Church Street with a bandana and shoes and socks on, but nothing else. And wondering what your feelings are on that. Give us a call at 802-244-1777 or toll free at 877-291-8255. And if you're a little shy about calling in, that's okay. You can go to our WDEV Facebook page and click on our poll question today, which is, should there be a law in Vermont to prevent people walking the streets in the nude? Right now, it's 67% say yes, 33% say no. It's gone back and forth very close through the time that we've been on the show and asking the poll. So if you do not want to call in, if you're a little shy, go on to our Facebook page and click on the question and answer yes or no. Should there be a law in Vermont to prevent people walking the streets in the nude? But if you aren't shy and you want to call in, give us a call at 802-244-1777 or toll free at 877-291-8255. The gentleman that was walking in the nude obviously would have violated the law if he would have gone into a park, because a park falls under an ordinance where you can't be nude in a park in Burlington. So be interested in your opinion. Let's go to Duxbury. Duxbury, you're on open mic. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. No, I think that, you know, there's a lot of people that like hanging out in the summertime without clothes on. And whether there's a law or not, I'm not sure. you know, I'm not sure it really matters. Somebody that takes that freedom this far, you know, probably wants to make an impact. He wants to make an impression. He wants to, like, push people's buttons. I think that, you know, this is a good time. This is like Donald Trump for me. This is an instance where we just ignore the class clown, and maybe he'll go away.
Mm-hmm.
So making a big deal about it and chatting about it on the radio endlessly and having people jumping up and down, freaking out because somehow impacted their sensibilities about how people should live, I think it's all a waste of time. I don't think it's anyone's place, mine or yours or anyone else's, to tell people how to raise their kids. I mean, you know, dealing with kids in a situation like this, you say, look, there's a naked guy, what a goofball, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And you just keep going. I mean, little kids see their parents naked. I mean, I'm not sure I get it, Mike, frankly. I think I think the laws are fine, and, you know, people have been swimming naked in the rivers for years and being respectful to other people about it. So that's all I got. Thanks for taking my call.
Well, thank you for calling in. Let's go to Sam in Williston. Sam, you're on open mic. Good morning.
I think that last gentleman kind of hit it on the head, Mike. If you're down at the local swimming hole where it's accepted, it's fine. I understand that. But if you're in an area that's conducting business, you know, the common sense approach needs to be attained. I mean, hell, they won't let you smoke down there.
Isn't that ironic, though, Sam? You can't smoke down there, but you can walk up the street nude.
Yeah, it depends on the scenario. I had a friend of mine's daughter who's a valedictorian of a class, and she was standing there with her graduation gown and dropped the graduation gown, and right in front of him, he went into shock. And she finished her speech, and it was about freedom. And, you know, every time you give up a freedom, those freedoms are hard to come by. And you don't get those back.
Yeah, but I don't see this freedom in the Constitution, do you?
I don't know if it's a constitutional freedom or just a freedom. You know? It's we are common law.
Right.
You know, Did that have to be written down? Maybe. I'm not sure. I think it all comes back to, you know, she was trying to make a point. Absolutely. Was this gentleman trying to make a point? Who knows? Maybe he might just be off his rocker. Who knows?
Hey, Sam, thank you for your phone call. We're going to just spend a few more minutes on this before I start getting a little bit more serious on aspects of globalization, because Bernie Sanders did write an op-ed in the New York Times. I want to come back to that in a minute. But I do want to get your opinions, and they've been sort of all over the map today in terms of this. There was a gentleman that walked up Church Street yesterday in the nude. Well, not completely. He had a bandana and shoes and socks on, but he was completely nude. And the question I have today, and it's the poll question. If you don't want to call in, you can go onto our WDEV Facebook page and click on the poll and click either yes or no. Should there be a law in Vermont to prevent people walking the streets in the nude? Right now it's 67% yes, 33% no. But if you aren't shy and you want to call in, express your opinion on this question. Should there be a law in Vermont to prevent people walking the streets in the nude? Give us a call at 802-244-1777 or toll free at 877-291-8255. There's a lot that I want to get to. Welcome back to Open Mic. I'm Mike Smith. We've been talking about, should there be a law in Vermont to prevent people walking the streets in the nude? And we've generated some phone calls about that and some participation on our website as well, on our Facebook page. We have the question posted there. And so if you want to continue this discussion, you can go there and vote either yes or no. Right now it's 56% yes, there should be a law in Vermont to prevent people walking the streets in the nude. And no at 44%. That's closer than I actually thought. But I do have a lot of other stuff that I want to get to, and I want to turn to that right now. There were two very, very different op-eds, but basically saying the same thing in today's newspapers. In the Wall Street Journal, there was an op-ed by William McGurgan. And one of the things that I was struck by is that he's basically saying the same thing that Bernie Sanders is saying in his op-ed in the New York Times, and that is that the anti-Breddix forces share an eliteness, a snobbery towards ordinary voters. And the question that arises is this. Are these elites missing the anger out there in the public? And if you look at the British vote, it isn't left or right. On both sides, it divided the left and right, almost 50-50. The vote to leave the European Union was not a left or right issue. It was an anger issue that is mostly directed at the status quo, and the status quo is not meeting the needs of the voters. And that narrative is important, because if you go down the narrative that some are going down, whether it's the press in Britain or others, that these people are blinded with their own ignorance or prejudice to understand what the deal is for them, then I think you're missing what is out there, and that's the anger over economic issues. Certainly, there's anger over immigration issues. Let's not minimize that. But there's very significant angst over economic issues. And that's what Bernie Sanders says today in his op-ed. He talks about globalization and how it has left many behind. And ironically, Trump is saying something similar to the consternation of conservatives. Bernie starts out his editorial by saying, his op-ed by saying, surprise, surprise, workers in Britain, many of whom who have seen a decline in their standard of living, while the very rich in their country have become much richer, have turned their backs on the European Union and a globalized economy that is failing them and their children. And what Bernie is saying is if Democrats miss this, it's going to be a rude awakening for them. And the headline is Bernie Sanders, Democrats need to wake up. Is there an anger out there that the elites are missing on a global scale? And does it have to do with immigration or economic issues or a combination of both? Be very interested in your comments. Give us a call at 802-244-1777 or toll free at 877-291-8255. Let's go to Rama in Williamstown. Rama, you're on open mic.
Yeah, hi, Mike. First off, Bernie is, as usual, is absolutely correct. And I do have a partial solution that I'll offer at the end of my little diatribe here. But I do want to say that this is about economic issues, because it's the economic issues that are driving the immigration.
Mm-hmm.
And without the economic hardships in certain areas, and, you know, of course, civil wars don't help any, but you wouldn't have the type of immigrations and migrations that you see occurring in different parts of the world today. And it's not so much the global economy per se. It's how it's been developed. And it hasn't been developed with the idea of the person performing labor in mind or the environment in mind, and that's what people are rejecting. You know, they're rejecting this idea that we make these trade deals, and not when I say we, actually, it's around the world. Trade deals are made, and they make it, they're set up to improve the position of capital, i.e. money. So the more money you have, the better position you are. But they do a horrible job at helping to spread workers' rights, environmental rights, and things like that. And that's the populism part that Bernie Sanders tapped into. And therein is a huge difference between him and Donald in the fact that Donald is tapping into an anger and getting people to lash out about anger. Bernie Sanders was tapping into a bona fide dissatisfaction with what is being done to people and proposing solutions that could move forward.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I would offer as a partial solution, and I think it comes from Burlington. As you think about all these people that sit down in the State House in Montpelier, in the governor's office, the presidency, in Congress, or sit over in whatever the EU Congress is called, or the British, the UK Parliament, think of all of them if they had to sit down naked and face each other and write these laws up. It would be a tremendously humbling experience to be able to look at each other without all, any of the pretenses of fancy clothes and well-shined shoes and tailored suits, etc.
I was wondering where you were going with that.
So, yeah, so I listen, nudity has its place, and sometimes it is out on Main Street.
Hey, thank you, Rama, for your call. I don't know where to go with that. Let's get back to the main question. Bernie Sanders today had a op-ed in the New York Times, and he talks about globalization and the fact that Democrats really need to focus on this issue of how globalization is dividing people between the haves and the have-nots. And ironically, 2 days ago, Donald Trump hit on a similar theme. Now, I know that they are different, so different politically. But the theme that weaves through all this, whether it's the Bredex vote, the Bernie op-ed, or the op-ed that I just saw in the Wall Street Journal that are from very, very different people, but basically saying the same things, that the elite out there are missing a huge, huge issue with voters who are very angry at these economic issues. They feel the rich are getting richer, the poor are getting poorer, the middle class is disappearing. What is your opinion on this? 802-244-1777 or toll free at 877-291-8255. Also, just wanted to bring up, there's, you know, we talked with this about Ellen Ratner, and it depends, actually with Garrett Graff as well. Depends on where you sit on this issue is how you view Hillary Clinton on the Benghazi issue. If you remember, Benghazi was an attack that happened on a American diplomatic compound. The first attack was on the American diplomatic compound. And what happened was our ambassador, Chris Stevens, went into a safe area within his villa, because it isn't an embassy. It was in a villa. And also with him was a communications specialist that went into that. The terrorists couldn't get into that villa, so they set it on fire. And, of course, they died from smoke inhalation in that villa. And then there is the CIA compound, because that was guarded by contractors that were coming over to try to help the diplomatic force that was there. There were only about 4 or 5 people that were over there to protect the ambassador, and the CIA compound had another force, a contracted force of about 5 people that came over to try to help, and they came over and saved those diplomatic protection detail that was there, took them back to the CIA annex, it's called. That CIA annex was under attack 3 different times over a 13-hour period, if you include the attack on the American diplomatic outpost or the diplomatic property there. The Benghazi, the Republicans have said, and the Washington Post says this today, the Republicans' Benghazi goose chase comes up empty. And then if you read the Wall Street Journal on its opinion, it says Clinton's Benghazi cover story. And somewhere in the middle is the truth here. It wasn't a film that caused this attack. It was a terrorist attack. We now know that. We weren't prepared for this attack in terms that the diplomatic compound was not adequately protected. We did leave some of our people unprotected because there was no immediate military response to save those people. The people got out, other than four people died, two at the diplomatic compound, the ambassador and the communications specialist, and two former SEALs guarding the CIA annex that with repelled three different attacks. So it all depends on where you are. A couple of things, just I'm going to move on to something else here. Mary Powell, last night, CEO of Green Mountain Power, lost her house in South Hero. Our condolences go out to her and her family. And Pat Summitt, just a wonderful, wonderful person and a pioneer in women's sports. She was the coach of Tennessee for women's basketball. What a wonderful woman. And she just will be missed. Just a presence in women's sports. Coming up tomorrow, we'll have Peter Galbraith in, and we'll be talking about his run for governor. This is Open Mic, and you are listening to locally owned and operated WDEV Radio News on the Friendly Pioneer, celebrating its 85th year anniversary this year. WDEV AM 550, broadcasting from Waterbury and Montpelier, 96.1 FM from Warren, 96.5 FM from Barrie, and serving the kingdom at 101.9 FM from Island Pond. Of course, we're streaming worldwide at WDEVradio.com. I'm Mike Smith. Thank you for your phone calls. Have a great rest of your day, and we'll talk again tomorrow.
The Open Mic Podcast is brought to you by Hickok Boardman, Dennis Ricker, and Brown.
Find us online at hbinsurance.com. And you're always welcome to visit us on Facebook, in Vermont, online, on the phone. Hickok and Boardman Insurance Group. We are here when you need us.